Welcome, everyone. Behind Our Eyes presents the Bow Book Launch for Thursday, April 18, 2024. Tonight's special presentation during National Poetry Month features
Each Day Holds Some Small Joy,
a poetry book from one of our authors, Linda McKinney Lambert. Linda will be interviewed by fellow author Lisa Bush. I'm Marlene Massot, your host. Welcome, everyone. Take it away, Lisa.
Good evening, everyone. I'm first going to read a little biography of Linda, and I'm so glad you're all here. So Linda calls the village of Wittenberg in Western Pennsylvania home. She was a tenured professor of fine art and humanities, Geneva College, Beaver Falls, PA, where she taught studio art and English literature and was an art history lecturer for the humanities program. In addition to her full-time work on campus, she also taught courses in Europe each summer until her retirement. Linda earned 3 degrees between 1985 and 1994. She earned a BFA in painting, summa cum laude, Slippery Rock University of Pennsylvania in 1989. In 1994, she completed the terminal degree MFA in painting at West Virginia University. She earned the MA in English degree at Slippery Rock University of PA in 1994. Her literary influences are Come Away, My Beloved by Frances Roberts, published in 1964. She also is fond of the book The Narrow Road to the Interior, which is by Basho. She did a number of focus theses, one on John Donne, one on Robert Bly, one on Williams Carlos Williams, and a solo exhibition of paintings and woodcut prints. Her published thesis focused on the connections between art and writing. It was titled Commemorative Recollections. Her 7 favorite poets are Rita Dove, Louise Gluck, Rilke, King David with the Psalms, King Solomon, Walt Whitman, Joseph, and I might not pronounce this right, Komenyaka. Thank you. Her poems have appeared in Mingled Voices, which is an anthology that's published in Hong Kong, the China University of Hong Kong, and they've appeared for 6 years in that anthology. The most recent poetry award was Provost Hong Kong 8, and she got 3rd place for best single poem, The Peaceful Prayer Garden. And it can be viewed on YouTube after April 24th. She got an award from Provost Hong Kong also for her body of work. They have different judges from all over the world. Her specialty in this book is haiku, tonka, and freeform. So before we get to the poems, let's take a moment and think about this quote. Do not doubt. Each day holds some small joy that shall escape you if you are preoccupied with tomorrow. And that's from Frances J. Roberts, American author, 1918 through 2009, from the book Come Away, My Beloved. I am pausing at the end of every poem that is read tonight because Linda has a special love for space and believes that in space, we can take in better what is being said. So, Linda, would you like to read a poem to start our talk? Morning Walk Revealed or something?
Yes, I would be happy to do that. I'm going to read the first poem that you'll encounter when you begin to read the poems in the book. And I will note that the poems are only on the right-hand side pages. The left-hand side pages are blank so that we have a nice field of space And the poems are, if they're a three-line poem, there are only two on a page. If they're a tonka, there's only one on a page. And I wanted to create a restful, peaceful, contemplative space for the poems. So I'm going to read the first poem in the book. Morning walk revealed. Pink peonies waking up. Soft, damp rain showers.
So do you have any comments about the poem, like when you wrote it, or you remember anything just special?
I would say just about all the poems I write as I'm experiencing them. I'm outside a lot because I live in a wooded area on a country road. And so I walk my dog through the woods every day. And it's our house is on a ridge overlooking the Conequenessing Creek. And that's a 50-mile long creek in western Pennsylvania. And it just, like a snake, the creek just winds back and forth and back and forth for 50 miles. So as I'm outside, I try to memorize things. Like I try and think about my senses, like what I'm smelling, what I'm seeing. I have some peripheral vision, so I don't see anything clearly, but I can tell when I get close enough to something, you know, like I can see a flower if it's popping up in the air there, it'll catch my attention if there's contrast. So what I try to do is I just sort of walk there. Like if I'm walking through the woods, I'm real intentional and I am trying to memorize the moment and what I'm seeing, what I'm perceiving or thinking. If I see colors, I will put those colors in my mind. I have a really good memory for imagery, really good memory for imagery. And I have a really good memory for being in touch with my senses and recording those things in my mind while I'm looking or walking outside. So in this particular poem, it's about the peony bush, which I say it's waking up, so we know it's morning. And the wonderful thing about this peony bush, my house was built in 1929. I was fortunate enough to buy this house when the original person who had it built lived next door. And so I got to know her. And one day she said, you know, those peonies up there in your yard, I planted those peonies when the house was built. She was an old lady at the time. But so if the house was built in 29 and she planted them here, she had to, those have to be almost 100-year-old vintage peony plants. So they're really special. They're coming up out of the ground right now. And the more it rains, the more they're coming up and everything's like really coming up out of the ground. So rain is always connected, you know, the dampness and the rain showers are always connected with the plants coming up out of the ground after winter. So that's what inspired that.
That's beautiful. Okay. Do you want to read the next one? Each day brings splendor.
Yes. Go ahead.
I particularly like a certain word in this poem. Okay. Go ahead.
I know. This poem appears on the same page with the peonies waking up. So, each day brings splendor. Yellow daffodils blooming. Panoramic joy.
Panoramic is the word that I really, that just jumps right out at me. It's like it's everywhere. It's almost like it's sprinkled over everything.
For me, the key word there is splendor. I love the word splendor. And I'll tell you what it reminds me of. And this is from long, long, long ago. There was a movie called Splendor in the Grass.
Oh, yeah.
With Natalie, what's her name? Anyway, that word, I always relate to that movie, but I love that word splendor.
Both words are good.
Oh, okay.
Both words, panoramic and splendor. They're both
yes. good.
Should I say Natalie Wood and Warren Beatty?
Yes,
yeah, that's,
you should.
That's right. That, yeah.
Ooh, they were something together, weren't they?
Yeah. If you want to say something else about the poem, you can, but otherwise I will go on and read a quote from the book.
You can go ahead.
Okay. As I work in my gardens, I find intimate messages of profound love from the God of all creation. I think of this passage in Psalm 19:1. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Can you explain more about how nature brings you closer to God? Is it just the fact that God created such beauty? It seems that you are, see beauty as God's act of loving you. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. I never thought about it, but for me, I have to begin with whatever I'm doing or writing. It comes from my worldview, from my core values. And for me, the quote from the Bible, in the beginning, God. And I see, as I read Genesis, how creation took place.
Using their computer and causing echoes.
Okay. I connect all of nature with the goodness of God, with his bounty. And no matter how human beings screw things up and make problems and wars and things like that, the beauty and the splendor that he created and put us in as human beings, it doesn't change. It's here. It's always here. His hand is seen in everything, the sky, the earth, and the air we breathe. And that's because that's my worldview. That's my core. And everything that I write or think about or my life shows that. And I have to say, if I talk about worldview, when I went for my interview at Geneva College, I was a executive director of an art museum. And when I went to walk through the door at the building where I was going to be interviewed, I saw the sign that said Geneva College, something about a Reformed Presbyterian Church. And I remember looking at that as I was walking through the door, and I thought, I never heard of that before. And I was going for an interview. And then I thought, well, if I get the job, I'll figure that out. And I did get the job. And one of the first things that I discovered I had to do there, I mean, the core of the college, all learning there, begins with teaching students to understand they have a worldview. I didn't know I had a worldview. I laugh when I think about it today, how green I was. And the other thing is, and most of the students come there, they have no clue they have a worldview either. So when I would have to come in and do the humanities lecture, everything there is philosophy based, the education there is philosophy based. And the other thing was, I never took philosophy because I was so afraid of it. And so here I am, coming to teach at a college where I don't even know what it's really about. And then having to learn that, to begin to figure out what my worldview was, you know, and then to be able to teach through that. So that has a lot to do with it.
Well, when you can't visit your garden, where do you look for each day's joy?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
When you can't visit your garden, you know, because of the weather or some other reason.
I'm a pretty happy person. I've traveled a lot, and I can tell you I've never been any place I didn't like. I liked every place I went. So I just think that I bring my own happiness with me wherever I go. And I've been places where, you know, I was in bad situations and like, oh, you know, I just want to get out of this. And I mean, I've been through all kinds of troubles and stuff, but I just have this cavernous space inside of me that bubbles up, and I can find things of value wherever I am. So if I can't be outside, and I don't always want to go outside, it's not, you know, pulling weeds is really hard work. It's heavy work and lugging all that stuff, you know, that you've pulled out away. And
right.
But I have learned to look at it like, just go out and do it for 1 hour. You can do anything for an hour. So that's how I started out, just by telling myself to go do this task for an hour. But I'm to the place now where I go out there. It is just such a wonderful experience. I don't care about how hard the work is. I don't care how sweaty and dirty I am. And I am. It's like I am so in touch with it now. Just like when my fingers reach down and I can't see a lot of the weeds. And I've pulled out flowers that I planted and was waiting to come to bloom. And I've pulled them out. Like, it doesn't make me very happy because I think the flower never grew, but it did. I pulled it out. So, but I have to put my fingers down in there, and I have to really take my time, and I have to allow my fingertips to feel those plants and things. And you can tell the difference between the weed and whatever it is you're working with. But you have to go nice and slow. You have to really just be patient and do it. But when I'm not outside, I'm in the house. I have 7 cats. And I mean, I didn't plan to have 7 cats, but I live in the country and people drop off animals and they show up, and it wouldn't be in my heart to leave them out there in the rain and cold and no food. So I end up with 7 of them. And they're each one individual and distinct. I have a mommy and 3 of her babies. And then I have, no, 4 of her babies. And then I have a couple other cats too that were sister cats. But, and I have a dog. So it really keeps me busy taking care of them. Just, you know, getting up first thing every morning is clean their litter boxes. And you have to feed them. So if I get up at 3 o'clock, it's breakfast time. You don't fool around with cats. They line up all around you in the kitchen. Maybe I just came down to get a drink in the kitchen. The cats are there, and you cannot go back to bed if they haven't been fed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they keep me busy. I also make art. I do fiber art, and I exhibit that. And I'm in the Insights show usually every year down in at American Printing House for the Blind. And Carol is also. And we always laugh and say that I'm her competition and she's my competition. I mean, we're rooting for each other. It doesn't matter. The fact is we're doing it. That's all that matters. So I do things like that. And then I listen to books and read. Yeah, that's about it.
Sounds like a very full, wonderful life.
It's a very solitary life. But I've always been a solitary person from the time I was a small child. I really enjoy being by myself. I'm never lonely. And I don't mind going anywhere by myself. And but I also enjoy company, and I enjoy being out and about. But I'm just fine if I'm by myself.
Good. Okay, you want to read Hidden Behind Leaves?
Oh, yeah. I like this one, too. Okay. Hidden Behind Leaves. Waxy, dangling waterfall, small pink Hoya blooms.
Do you have anything you want to say about that one?
Well, as just to the source where it comes from, I have a Hoya plant here in my office right behind me. This plant was my grandmother's plant. And my grandmother died when I was, I think, 15, and I'm 80 now. So you know how old the plant is. And the plant was handed down to my mom. It was always in her bedroom in the winter and out on her porch for the summer. And then when my mom passed away, I have the plant. And I've made starts off of it and given lots of people starts off of this plant over the years. So I was, you know, the boy was blooming. And so that was what I was writing about. I try to be really specific, and I've learned that just by not being specific and having an editor talk to me about it. So I try to really pay attention when an editor tells me something. Like, I was reminded today that one editor, he was in England, I think it was called Frozen Butterfly. It was a haiku magazine. So I sent him, and this is a number of years ago, I sent him my little list of poems, hoping to be in his magazine. He sent me a note back and says, "I don't like your haiku at all."
Oh, no.
So instead of being upset about it, I said to him, "Could you please tell me what it is about it that I need to know so that I can write better haiku?" That man was a goldmine, because instead of being upset and pouting because he didn't just reject me. He was really rude. But he turned out to be wonderful, and he gave me the best advice. And that's been, you know, some years ago. But I do that. Like, I could, if you send out a lot of stuff, you get a lot of rejections. That's what it's all about. You need to get those rejections. And those rejections teach you things that you need to know. So I really embrace those. Some of the best things I know I've gotten from people that didn't publish my work and told me why. So
that's a really good outlook that you have. You want to read Painted Duck, and then maybe you could explain why you put those two poems together near each other?
Yeah. Painted Concrete Duck. I sip green mountain tea. House wren darts from nest. So usually what I'm writing about is something organic and something from nature, or a season without telling anybody what season is. You need to be able to create the atmosphere of a season without calling it winter or summer, if you want to have a traditional Japanese haiku poem. So I have this concrete duck. It's a white duck out in my, and this is terrible to even say this out loud, it's out in my Zen meditation garden. That's outrageous to put something like that in your Zen garden. But I end up putting it there. I don't know where my husband got this white duck. I don't like yard ornaments like that very much. He brought it home from somewhere and he painted it all. It was all dirty and stuff, and he painted it. So it's just been special. And so I put it here and there every summer. I put it away for the winter and then in the summer. But last couple summers, it's sort of ended up in the Zen garden, kind of like over around the fern area. And it was cute there. So anyway, that was my specific, my concrete duck. But I was thinking about the idea of concrete. You know, you think of sidewalks and stuff and thinking about being specific about the space. When you think of concrete, that's something really real. You don't think of that as being elusive or anything. It's like heavy and it's weighty and it's a solid material. So I'm balancing that artificial solid concrete duck against the house wrens, not against, but in tandem with the house wrens. And when I say that they have a nest, then you know it must be May or early June, but I don't tell you that. And then I'm in the middle there, and I very rarely put myself in a poem. I don't really like to do that. And I also recognize that most poems that have an I in it, that I is usually not the poet, usually. But anyway, this is me. I am sitting there sipping mountain tea while the house wrens are tending their nest and the duck is sitting there in the garden.
So the idea is that the duck is solid and the wrens are more, not, I can't think of the word, but like, you said you were trying to balance the two.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
Can you talk about how the poems are placed and their links with each other?
I will confess that I looked at the concrete duck poem a dozen times, and I kept thinking I needed to take it out. And then I just couldn't take it out. That when you asked me about that, I thought, oh, okay. Because I had
well, I wasn't asking you because I saw anything wrong with it. I just I know. Wasn't quite.
It was so funny because that's one of the first things that you landed on was that one thing that I kept wrestling about leaving in the book.
Yeah.
Okay, what did I do? I turned the page here. Let me see. You wanted me to talk about why I put two poems together. So let me
see. Or just in general, why you place, why you place poems next to each other, like the links between them.
In some cases, there's really not a link between them. When I had 130 poems. I planned to write this book with just 50 poems. It was going to be a chapbook. And I hardly ever have ever sent out a haiku or tonka anywhere for publication. Almost not at all. Other than to the Avocet. And I counted today. 27 of the 130 poems were published in the Avocet by Charles Portolano or in the Weekly Avocet, one or the other. So and then another one of the poems was published in, I think it was a Tonka. I think it was published in, Tonka. It was in the Tonka Journal. And I did publish there a number of times in Tonka Journal. And the editor of that journal had wrote to me and said, "You have a gift for Tonka." He said, "This is just your thing." Unfortunately, that magazine isn't published anymore, and it was a beautiful magazine. It came wrapped in like cellophane, like a beautiful package. Like I would give it to get as gifts for people because it was just like precious. It was a beautiful chapbook. So the one of the poems that's in my book was in the Tonka Journal. And then there was another series of poems that's at the end of the book. It's the Yosemite series that I wrote in 1991. And they were published about, 20 years later. I had not been sending these out anywhere. And I had no intention of writing a book. It started out a few years ago when I just decided that since I do all the gardening and the flowers and really love the woods and stuff, I would just now and then, or maybe once a week, put it on my blog, put a poem there. I would write a poem and put it there. So after about 3 years of doing that, I don't know, somebody said to me one day, why aren't you putting together a book about your, about your gardens? I said, because I never thought of it. And I was really very preoccupied the last 10 years. My husband became very ill 10 years ago with acute myeloid leukemia. And that is, if you ever know of anybody that had that, I can't imagine anything worse in the world for anyone. And he survived almost 10 years. And he passed away just in January. In fact, 3 months ago today. So I wasn't even thinking of writing a book. It was just, this is, while I'm watching him and taking care of him, this was something that I could do so that I could be in my office, which is right off the kitchen, and I could see wherever he was or go, chase after him or whatever. If he went out, I knew it because the kitchen door is right there. So I think that this was why I was doing all these poems. I just had to have something to give myself to do. And it was the garden poems. And I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back on it, I just can't even believe that I wrote all these during those years. And I never intended to write a book. But then when the idea came to me, I thought, why not? That could be really nice. So I set to work. I never dreamed when I did a book launch with Behind Our Eyes last year, I never in this world dreamed I would be sitting here today with a book and having a book launch. Never entered my mind. I was not, a year ago, I was not working on a book at all. So I was just trying to get through each day and try to write some poems a little bit each day. So.
Well, you did a beautiful job. And I understand what it's like to have someone ill and trying to do something
I
else.
Many of us here do. I know.
Yes, yes. Do you see your poems as paintings in some way?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I say somewhere in the book. I think it may be around where I did the preface, either there or in the author's page at the end. But I make a little statement. It's really in the form of a poem, but I say in there that for me, there has never been a line between art and writing, because art and writing were both something that I was doing all the time. It was my normal. I didn't think of it as, oh, today I'm writing or today I'm making art. It was just stuff. It was just what I did back and forth, you know. Being a BFA major, you write your heart out while you're making art. You take every kind of art that a BFA student takes, every kind of art that's taught at the whole university. And then but the last year is when you do your focus and do your show. But so, and then I was taking art history. I took every art history course that the university offered. And I was wild about, because I love to do research and I love to write. And the other thing was, I had a professor that was from Germany, and I really connected with her. And one day she said to me, Linda, your writing is so different than all the other students. And she said, you write like you were raised in Europe. She said, this is the kind of writing that I would see in Germany. And I had never been there, but she saw that in my writing. And so she really, I just really clicked with her. I took everything the school offered. I was there. And I did the same thing in grad school. I was always writing about art. Art and poets is the two things I wrote about. Yes.
Did you always have such a close relationship with flowers?
Yes, I did. I can remember as a small child, I grew up in my father's garden. And I would plant things. I was small, but I would plant things that he didn't know about. And anything that had a seed, if I had an acorn or anything, I would plant it. And then if somebody would give me flowers, I remember I was very young, and the pastor where we went to church, I have no idea how this happened, but I'm a little kid. And I remember the pastor came to our house one day, and he had a big package of, like, he had flowers wrapped up in newspaper, and the newspapers were wet, and they were huge marigold plants. He brought those and was in the garden with me, helping me plant these marigolds across the edges of my dad's garden. I have no idea how that ever came about. I was just a little kid, but somehow that pastor must have knew that I really liked to plant things. But I would drive my dad crazy. He would say, Linda, you make it awful hard for me to mow the grass. You have the morning glories coming out of the yard. And the other flower I remember from my dad's garden, and I've not seen one since I was a child, but boy, I'd like to have some. They were called moonflowers, and they only bloomed at night, and you could smell them for a long distance at night. It was a beautiful scent.
Wow.
And they were like, they were called moonflowers. They were big. So, but cool. The other thing I did in my dad's garden is I had trucks and cars and built roads. So I was always outside, you know, if it was raining, I was out there in my bare feet, stomping in my puddles and climbing trees. And
sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So does anyone have any questions?
Well, this is Alice. And so I'll say, first of all, congratulations, Linda, on the publication of your sixth book. And Lisa, you're doing a beautiful job. Like you had said, Linda, to think that you are the featured poet both April, National Poetry Month 2023, and another new book for us here, National Poetry Month in 2024, is absolutely wonderful. And I certainly congratulate you on having those two books just 1 year apart. To have you as our featured presenter here in April again of this year. But I'm thinking of one of your haikus, that you mentioned the word licorice in it.
Yes.
Pronounce it licorice. I know it's pronounced different ways depending on where you're located. I don't know if you're going to read that poem later, but you're, in a sense, it seems to me that comparison between icicles and licorice, I found that one of your very interesting haikus. And then the one about the spider web and the movable feast. And I think Hemingway, movable feast, and reading that book and another book that sometimes is read along with that, one of Hemingway's. And then to read this poem and think of that, I thought, oh, Hemingway would probably love that poem.
I think he would too. I love Hemingway.
I just wondered if you wanted to make a comment about one of those.
Yes, I'll comment on both of them.
Yeah, you could read the icicle shimmer and
I
then
will.
Comment on that and then
I will.
Read the other one. Yeah.
Icicles shimmer, fluttering in hot weather. Fine silver licorice. Licorice is a plant in my garden. It is the most beautiful plant. It's silver and it shimmers in the sunlight, but the magic happens at night. It is what is known as like a moon garden. You can plant certain plants in a space where when the moon comes up at night, the moonlight will bounce off these certain plants, and licorice is one of them. And licorice just looks like silver icicles. That's just how it looks. And it shimmers. And so you can plant a little garden anywhere at all, in a space where the moon will pass over it. And if you plant like white flowers and silver flowers in there and mix them all up in there or whatever you want to do, or just a couple of plants, and when the moon comes out at night, you walk out there in the dark, and then those flowers, they're like, they just kind of light up like magic. It's unbelievable. They're so beautiful. You wouldn't even, they're, you know, during the day, they're pretty, but you wouldn't think. But then at night, oh my, it's like fairies are going to be under them or something, you know. Let's see. The other one that you asked about was, let's see. Yeah, I should have it here because I did send that out to everybody. So I made a copy so I could refer to them. Let me see.
Near the end of your selections, Linda.
Okay.
But thank you for the explanation of that haiku, because I was thinking of licorice candy and of the plant.
It was a new plant to me 2 years ago. My daughter and I saw it in Home Depot, and we just saw it and we both bought it and we were both crazy about it.
Oh.
Okay. I found the green spider. Garden spider. Garden spider spins sturdy web to catch insects. A movable feast. So I think about, of course, I thought of Hemingway when I wrote that. Those connections that just comes to your mind. But I think of the movable feast as being something that's portable and movable. So I'm talking about the spider catching stuff. And so that spider usually wraps it up tight and takes it somewhere or leaves it in a web to come back to it. And I think of like the idea of transporting something, but it's also impermanent. Like it's a feast for the spider, but it's not going to be there too long. And I just came up with the idea that the spider caught something and it's movable and it's going to take it somewhere maybe. So
like cats do when they catch a mouse or
yeah.
Something.
My dog came in today. When I went to bring her in the house, I saw something funny sticking out of her mouth. I don't know what it was. but it felt like something that was dead and flat. So I just banged it out of her mouth and put her back in the house. When you have animals, I'm telling you, you never know what a day is going to bring.
That's for sure. Anyone else have any questions?
Carol's hand is up.
Carol?
I just wanted to say that it's so nice to hear how you come up with your ideas. I was thinking as you were talking about your garden, how much of your garden is deliberate and how much of it is random or accidental? Because when you read your poem, there's always an element of surprise. And do you do that in the garden, or did the garden help you develop that? And I love your poems.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
You take care.
That's a really good question. I hadn't really thought about it, but I get a plant that I want to grow, and I just walk around with it until I find a place where it'll fit in somewhere. I think about how big it might be and what else would be behind it or in front of it, and, you know, try to place it so that it'll have its moment in the spotlight too, and not be overcome by something else with big leaves that go over it. And so I guess it's planned in that way, but I don't plan it. Like, I'm not a real gardener. I'm just a person that goes out and plants some nice things and takes care of them. You know, I mean, some people are like raising things in the winter in their house, and they have greenhouses, and that's, I don't do that at all. I just, you know, I'm just out there whenever the weather is decent enough for me to be out there. And I don't bring in bouquets. I don't plant them to bring in bouquets. I appreciate bouquets of flowers. I think they're wonderful. I love it when I get a bouquet of flowers, but I can't bring myself to go out and pick my flowers, because if I pick them, they're only going to live for a few days in the house if I'm lucky. But if I leave them alone out there, they'll go to sleep at night. They'll wake up in the morning and open up. They'll close again the next night. They might be out there for weeks if I don't pick them. And the other thing is, I also love the fact that, you know, you can see them when you're coming down our little country road. Anybody that just glances there can see all the flowers all over the place. And several people have stopped just to tell me how much they enjoyed seeing my flowers, or they've remarked that, oh, you're the person that planted those flowers. And, oh, I never expected to see this on a country road out here by the creek. And we call them creeks here. They're not creeks. But, you know, things like that. And that just, oh, that makes my heart happy, because I know that for maybe a moment or two in that person's day, they found something lovely and that they responded to it, or told me that they liked it. I don't know them at all. They just pass by, or they'll blow the horn and wave and stuff like that. The school bus driver blows the horn and waves every time she goes by. And I can't, you know, I don't know, like, is that her bus or not? I can't tell. So when the horn blows, sometimes I about jump out of my shoes because I don't know which bus it is. So I don't wave until I know for sure it's her bus. But if she blows the horn, then I wave.
It seems to me that you found a way of bringing bouquets of flowers to us through your poetry, so that, you know, you have bouquets that will last.
Oh, I'll take that. I like that. That's really nice. Yeah, I guess that's how I have them positioned. You know, I'm presenting you something for those that can see it visually, it's something to look at on the page. It's not a cluttered space. It's not like several poems like we're used to and like all my other books are and stuff. But I wanted this to be set apart, something that's set apart and different and peaceful. I would envision this as a book to give as gifts, you know, like Mother's Day and stuff. One person that is a huge fan of mine here in the Elwood City area, and I just love her so much, she got her new copy and she sent me a thing on Facebook. And so, you know, when like local people like what I do, that's really nice too. And because this is a small town, maybe like 5,000 people in the whole city, maybe something like that. And I live in the village outside the city. I didn't check to see what the population here is, but it's not much. It's an old village, over 200 years old, was settled by my German ancestors. And so it's just like wherever I traveled, I loved everywhere I ever traveled. I had a grand time anywhere I went. But when I come back here to this little village, it was like, I'm home. You know, this was like, oh, my house is so nice. Being all these castles and things. And then I come home and say, oh, but my house is so nice because it's home. So I want that kind of feeling to be in the book.
Deborah wanted to say something, and we have two more hands.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Linda. And I just wanted to say I've enjoyed reading your poetry, and it has been especially nice hearing you read it because you know how to accent, I think, the sounds and the syllables so that they resonate with us as the hearers of the poem. And I love the person, I think that was Carol, who said that you're presenting us with a bouquet of flowers through your poetry. So I think that is a very poignant statement about your book and about your work. And congratulations.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Okay.
The only thing I want to say about that, you were talking about how I read it. One of the courses that I had in graduate school down at West Virginia University, I had the privilege of being in one of the doctorate classes there. I was down there working on my MFA, but I asked if I could come to take a course on William Carlos Williams, and they let me in the class. But the most beautiful thing was, there were maybe six of us in the class sitting around the table, and maybe six or eight, and we could spend 3 hours on one poem. We could do that. And it was, I never had that experience in my life. I thought I died and went to heaven. And the one thing he would have us do is, let's say we were reading a poem. So he would have me read the poem. They'd look across the table and have another, maybe a guy read the poem. So three or four people would read that poem, one after the other. No two read alike. And so for me, I love that because whether I'm making art or whether I'm making poetry, it's in the making of it that is the art. And once it's made, it is no longer mine. And I know from being in that class, if four different people read it, it's being envisioned four different ways. They're picking up four different ideas or thoughts or themes. And so once I write it, put it out to the public or goes out in a book or in a magazine, it doesn't belong to me anymore. It belongs to every single person that reads it. And I'm just thrilled that somebody reads it. And I'm that way. I don't worry about what someone thinks about it. It's just out there. Thanks.
Okay. There are two more questions.
Next was Nell Anthony.
Okay. Linda, I wanted to say congratulations on the book. That's so awesome. And of course, you know, I follow you on like everything that I can think of to follow you on.
Well, I'm the same with you, you know. I always like to respond to you.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to comment on the spirituality of your work. I know a lot of people read my stuff and they probably think that I'm a witch or a Wiccan or something. Because a lot of my, what are they called? A lot of my books are kind of like about that type of character or whatever. But I just love that so much of your spirituality is in your book. Even when you're reading those three lines, you can hear that love. Not only that love, but that faith. You can hear that in almost, you know, in each line, almost each word. As you read tonight. So I wanted to say thank you for offering that as well. Somebody else may not see it, but I can almost feel it in
thank
everything
you so much.
That I see. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You made me smile.
Lisa, you may want to turn it over to Marilyn now.
Okay, but maybe we should just ask you, Linda, where we can find your book.
Yes. It's on Smashwords. It's ebook on Smashwords. It's $3.99, which is great, I think. And it's on Amazon. It's in all the formats there. I don't have it in Audible yet because obviously I just finished writing it. some of these poems I just wrote as she was editing the book. I would write some more and then I would send her more. So some of these poems are like 3 weeks old, and then other ones go back 30 years. So yeah, so you could go to Amazon. It's on Kindle and it's hardback and it's paperback. I did not have a copy myself until 2 days ago. That's how long it took me to get them. I had them ordered. So when I did the Branko show last week, I hadn't even seen my own book. And they really are gorgeous. So, and they're full color. Just from my garden in full color. And they're not a lot. They're here and there. Just the right kind of balance. And they'll be, like you'll see a certain flower there on your left. And then you'll see a poem on the right that'll address that flower just here and there.
Well, like thank you very said, much. Congratulations. So you can turn it over to Marilyn.
Okay. Thanks. I'm here because I'm president and we always do a little talk at the end so that people who see this on the website will know more about Behind Our Eyes. And this book launch program is relatively new and it's getting some recognition, getting our authors, helping them to reach out with this program that'll be up on our website. And thanks, Linda and Lisa. And I'm glad Linda's daughter is here. That's always nice. And I don't know how many others we have here who are not Behind Our Eyes members, but we're glad you're here and hope you keep up with the upcoming book launches and all of that, because I just love the way you presented it tonight, because every day does contain some joy and beauty. We just have to stop long enough. And I love the layout of the empty page on the left so that you can focus on what the words are on the right. We just have to take time out of our days to appreciate what is good about it and what there is to think about and build on. And I certainly hope you have the best of luck with this this book, because it really is you and your garden. You made me want to touch the concrete duck, drink the tea with you. And I, too, thought of the licorice as the icicles on the side of a house or something. And I thought, oh, she's comparing those to licorice sticks like we all grew up with. That goes back to what Linda was saying about once you've written it, it's everybody's then. I was glad to hear the explanation. We try to provide places where people can express themselves through poetry, short stories, essays, whatever, and stimulate thinking and do some entertaining while we're doing it. If you're not a member of Behind Our Eyes and you're watching this on our website, just think about whether you might like to be, if you're a writer with a disability. All you have to do is visit one of our websites, behindoureyes.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to join us, and you can also get more information. Browse that website and see what all we do, because we have Sunday night meetings and with speakers and panel discussions. We have a critique session coming up on the 5th of May, which I am moderating. I'll just slip that in. Okay, I just wanted to mention another website, our semi-annual magazine, Magnets and Ladders. We have a separate website for that, magnetsandladders.org, and that's our semi-annual magazine, and we should have one out toward the end of this month, I believe, and then come the summer, we'll be taking submissions for the fall-winter. Our email list is going strong. This is National Poetry Month, and we have Poet of the Day, where different authors take that position for one day, different poets, and we explore every form you ever thought of for poetry. So once again, thanks, Linda. Thanks, Lisa. And I will turn it back to Deanna or Terry or whoever.
Okay, Terry.
Thank you. I forget what the structure is of a tonka, and I would like to know how one is written, number one. And number two, since that beautiful magazine you described, Linda, that was wrapped in cellophane like a beautiful package, no longer exists for whatever reason, is there any other magazine that does accept Tonka.
Yes, there are actually a lot of magazines that that publish just Tonka or haiku. You can Google them. One very good one, to me, is the best one, is TSA. It's Tonka Society of America. It's for people that are really super into Tonka. I was in their anthology some years back. But so that's a really good one, TSA. And I think I sent a link to that, actually. And
Tonka Society of America. Okay.
Yeah, the website's fabulous. There's so much good information there. So Tonka is five lines.
Okay. Yeah,
generally speaking, it's 5-7-5-7-7.
Okay. 5-7-5-7-7.
Yeah. But there are some very specific parameters that you have to be aware of when you're writing either haiku or Tonka. And right. So if you visit some of these sites that specialize in that, you'll know. Because there's certain things, if I'll see something come up and I'll look at that and I'll say, this person doesn't really know what a Tonka is or what a haiku is, or they haven't done any research. But so, I mean, these are very specific, a form of poetry. It's traditional. And can learn that just by Google Tonka and see what comes up, and then just visit those sites. And that's how I learned. I just decided some years ago, I remember that was my project maybe for like National Poetry Month. I decided that I would learn to write a Tonka. So I ended up entering a world that I had no idea existed, and it's really deep. And I was, I was very involved in that for a few years. That's how I learned. I just learned by visiting these sites and asking editors about things that I didn't understand and reading the materials. So go on an adventure and look into it.
And I'm so glad that everybody came and that Linda could read her poems for us and talk about her work. And I just hope everyone has a really good evening.